WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Welcome to WrestleSpective. I am Jason Mann, and my guest today is Adam Jones of Kayfabe Comedy. Adam, how are you doing today?
Hi, Jason. First time, long time. Big fan, love you, love the program.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on. That's my sports talk radio voice right there.
Oh, okay. Well, it was good. that's good times. So, we're talking about a very fascinating main event, as we do here at WrestleSpective, talking about past pay-per-view main events. Today, we are talking about Bam Bam Bigelow against Bret the Hitman Hart, the final of the King of the Ring 1993.
Yeah, not the most conventional main events.
Not really, no. Certainly, Bret was familiar to the main event scene at the time, and you know, of course, would continue to be so in WWE throughout the most of the rest of the 90s. But yeah, Bam Bam, you know, this and WrestleMania 11 in 1995 were really his big, you know, times in main events, and even here it was just kind of a matter of circumstance.
Right. I mean, I won't. I mean, we'll talk about the card as a whole, but even then, if you sort of look at the way the tournament was laid out. The King of the Ring tournament was laid out. This actually probably was the best scenario that could have happened, just in terms of just because the roster in '93, to me, it was a transitional period for the WWF at the time. I think you'd agree with that.
Oh, definitely, yeah. It's interesting because this is kind of not this show is kind of a reset show, like. Basically, at the end of 92, Bret wins the title. Hogan is out for a while. Warrior's gone. Flair leaves. Savage is minimized. They're clearly moving in the direction of the next generation. Mm-hmm. Behind Bret, behind Yokozuna, Razor Ramon, you know, Lex Luger is going to be in the picture. So they're moving on to the next wave of guys. But WrestleMania 9 kind of interrupts that a little bit because the end of it, the main event of Bret Hart and Yokozuna beats Bret, does some shenanigans from Mr. Fuji, then Hulk Hogan steps up, defends his friend, then they challenge Hogan. Hogan gets the belt, so they're going back to Hogan, kind of derailing that whole, you know, rebuilding thing. But then this show, they decide, oh, no, we want to go through the generation after all.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being 9 years old and watching Mania 9 and saying, huh?
Yeah.
At the end of that.
Right.
And it was funny, though, like, the King of Ring 93 is actually probably the first pay-per-view I ever saw where I kind of knew what was going on. Like, I was actively engaged in the product rather than just, like, watching WrestleMania because that's what you did when you're getting into this hobby.
Sure.
But, yeah, it's to me, I mean, especially knowing this now, and I think you'd agree with I'm not sure if you agree or not, King of the Ring 93 kind of feels like a house show from, like, 1987.
A little bit, yeah. Expand on that a bit.
Well, obviously, it was a very small venue. I think mm-hmm. The house was only like 6,000 people, and I don't know if you've ever been to the Nutter Center in Dayton, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
It is not one of the finer buildings I've been in my entire life.
Yeah.
But even then, you know, I get the King of the Ring is, you know, was the gimmick and that's the name of the pay-per-view. And you want to end it with the King of the Ring coronation. You want to make this a big deal. But yet the championship match, Hogan, Yokozuna, went on number six.
Yeah.
And even then, I mean, it feels just like it went on like before intermission. So that way Hogan could now get in the car and drive to Hartford, Connecticut, to go to the main event of the Hartford Civic Center show when they just finished up the weekend double shot in Westchester, New York, or something like that.
Right. Yeah, I get that. Which is interesting because 93 feels like kind of a throwback year because they weren't really sure what to do. So they kind of go with a lot of like colorful gimmicks, and they kind of go with a lot of like almost like old-timey wrestling feel is just kind of how some of their booking was. Like you know, we mentioned the scurriness of WrestleMania 9 finish, but the finish here at this match is, you know, there's some, you know, shenanigans going on. There, you know, the end of WrestleMania, or excuse me, SummerSlam 93 also is a, you know, an ending that kind of leaves you know, kind of, huh. It's almost like Jim Crockett was booking, you know, these shows. Like, you know, you were having like the unsatisfying or not quite complete finishes that which you usually had in WWF pay-per-views up until now.
Right. I mean, especially, I think what this would have been number five of the year, the fifth pay-per-view, and which is a
Right.
brand new thing. And it's like,
Yeah.
there definitely was the feeling of, pay-per-view is where the thing ends, and now we're going to move on to the next chapters. And yeah, this one was purely to set up future stuff.
And it was to rebuild Bret, I think, as well, to a certain extent, who had sort of been hurt by that King of the Ring loss. And this is be like, oh no, we still think Bret's a big deal, and we you know, we're behind him, and it's all good. So, and it was an opportunity for Bret to kind of show how, you know, he would have three very good to great matches against three very different opponents, to kind of show his versatility as well. So, this is definitely, you know, part of, you know, of building him up for sure. But so yeah, we have anything else you want to bring up about the build up leading into the show?
It's interesting because it's not necessarily angles as much as they just had the wrestling challenge and the superstars qualifying matches. So it's even then you look at just the roster of people they, who theoretically the first round were on TV. It's like, Bam and Bigelow versus Typhoon. Like,
Right.
I mean, is that really, was that ever really a contest in '93?
Yeah, Typhoon was pretty much on his way out. I didn't even think of him as being there by then.
I mean, not, yeah, but not even, not even knowing that, you just go, well, Typhoon's this gag character and Bam Bam Bigelow is this tough looking dude. Or,
Sure.
Mr. Perfect versus Doink the Clown, and I get, Doink
Yeah.
was probably bigger than he had ever any hopes of being,
Yeah.
but still, it's, and yet somehow Perfect and Doink had like a three match series going to
Yeah,
all these draws,
which is
and
actually really good. From what I remember. So yeah, you know, Doink obviously, you know, the kind of the thing with him was that he was this silly character, but he also was a really good wrestler. They kind of emphasized that as well. But you're right. Yeah, you know, you look back at that, it's like, huh, that's weird.
Right, but I think the biggest thing, just the build up, was the fact that Bret Hart got a bye.
Oh yeah, which I
It's,
guess he
and
needed it. Yeah.
I know President Tunney, came in and said, since Bret lost so shadily at WrestleMania, we're gonna give him a bye to this secondary pay-per-view.
Yeah.
But
That's kind of a weird decision.
it is. It's almost just like the bye is a thing you do to get Bam and Bigelow heat. Which is what they did in the pay-per-view. So it just seems weird that they give Bret Hart in the first round. You want him to be this champion who had four hard-fought matches. It's
Yeah.
almost like instead of doing Luger Backlund in the qualifiers, they should have done Bret Backlund.
Right.
But whatever. It's
Well.
it is what it is. And the show itself, the tournament itself, actually was pretty good. It was probably one of the better King of the Rings. So.
Yeah, well, we'll just go, you know, we'll just mention the matches for the on the show. We have Bret Hart beating Razor Ramon in like about 10 minutes, which is actually a real good match. I think it's even better than their they had a Royal Rumble 93 match, which was okay, but I think this one's quite a bit better from what I remember. And then we have Mr. Perfect and Mr. Hughes, Mr. Battle. And then Perfect,
Band.
I'm sorry.
What a terrible band.
Yes. And Perfect wins that one by disqualification. Mr. Hughes is, he had a couple of different stints with WWE, none of which lasted more than like a month, I would think.
Wasn't he Jericho's
Yes.
bodyguard for like a month?
He was Triple H's bodyguard for a month too,
Okay.
in early 97. So yeah, I think he had three different ones. And like I
Okay.
said, I don't think combined, I don't think they lasted more than 4 months. So Bigelow beat Jim Duggan by pin. Duggan was another guy on his way out, another 80s guy who was out of here. And then Lex Luger and Tatanka had a 15-minute draw that seemed like about 85 minutes from what I remember.
Yeah, I remember being 9 and being into Tatanka, so I probably enjoyed that match a little more. But knowing what I know now, I'm probably wouldn't have liked it as much.
Yeah, Lex Luger draws on WWE pay-per-views are not good things. I'm trying to remember. Was Luger Yokozuna in WrestleMania 10? Was that a draw? Or I think actually Yokozuna won that one by
yeah,
DQ.
Yeah, Yoko won it.
Yoko won it by DQ. That's right, because Perfect DQ'd Lex Luger, and that was like going to be a thing, and they never did anything with it. So,
yeah,
never mind. But anyway, you know, Lex Luger long matches on pay-per-views, not generally a good thing. So, mm-hmm. Unless he's wrestling Flair or something. But, so then we get to, of course, the second round is Bret Hart against Mr. Perfect, which is just a great, great match. Not a surprise given that the two of them, but I honestly like that one better than their SummerSlam 91 match, which is, you know, wonderful as well, of course. But in Bret's big step toward winning the Intercontinental Champion and really his establishment as a single star was that match. But this one I really... It's a lot the same, but it's just a different dynamic because they're both good guys, and just, you know, the way they play off each other is just really wonderful.
And, you know, Perfect hadn't been wrestling as much around this time, so it felt a little fresher. I think everyone clearly wanted, you know, that match to be, you know, we looked at the brackets. It's almost like you look at Mania 4 and you're like, oh, well, Savage and Steamboat are going to meet in the next round. It's like same deal. It's like, I think if they decided to book Razor Ramon versus Mr. Hughes, we would all hate wrestling forever.
Right. It'd be like King of the Ring 95, you know. you think you might get Shawn Michaels, Undertaker, and then it's like Savio Vega and Mabel or something like that. I forget the exact things, but that kind of idea.
Savio wrestled like 10 matches that night.
Yeah, well, I bet none of them were any good either. So that leads to the, our final of Bret Hart and Bam Bam Bigelow. And also noteworthy on the show, as we alluded to, of course, is Yokozuna beating Hulk Hogan for the WWF Championship. not exactly cleanly, because there's something, if I remember correctly, there's a Japanese photographer who gets up on the apron and like takes a photo, and there's like fire that goes in Hulk Hogan's face. And
you're a little off here.
Okay.
It was supposed to be a Japanese photographer, but it was really Harvey Whippleman in disguise.
Oh, did they reveal that?
Yes, that was a reveal.
Oh, is that revealed later, or is that revealed on the show?
I
feel like that must have been later, because I don't remember that on the show.
That was later. I mean, obviously, it was weird because Hogan was on his way out, so they didn't want to draw sympathy on Hogan as much as they did it to draw heat on Yoko, because he's this giant monster, and he needs this little dude to fireball it.
Sure.
That's undoubtedly the weirdest title match I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah. And you're right, because it's interesting, because once like it's done, like there's no mention of Hogan again. Like usually if Hogan had some sort of thing where he was screwed earlier in the show, they would address it later. It would be a big deal. But here it's just like, oh, yeah, Yokozuna's champion. That's it. Let's move on. You know,
I mean, that's a little kind of scummy, too, when you know, years later you get to know what you know. And it's like, oh, Hogan didn't want to put Bret over. Like, that's why this all had to happen.
Yeah.
The plan was for Bret to challenge Hogan for the title, and then Hogan's like, well, I don't want to lose to Bret Hart. I'll look weak. So let me get squashed by this 500-pound guy after a fireball.
Yeah. Which, you know, but at the same time, like, I get that from Hogan's side, the relationship with Vince wasn't very good, and, like, you know, he didn't really trust – like, I don't know if he – like, it's probably better – it would have been better if Bret had been able to beat Hogan, but if the timing wasn't going to make it work, it's probably just better that he stepped out and that they moved on to the next thing too, to a certain extent, you know. But I hate to be the guy to defend Hulk Hogan, but I don't think I don't know if necessarily Vince was anywhere what should have been this. We should be sympathizing with Vince in the situation either, because I think he was, from what I've read in Bret's book and other sources, it sounds like he was playing Bret and Hogan to each other to a certain extent as well.
So. Okay. And also, you know, Vince is in love with the big guy as champion, too. So, I mean,
the
belt was going to Yoko no matter what, eventually.
Right. Although, you know, of course, that you know, Yoko was really the first heel champion they ever had for any extended period of time, you know, other than Superstar Graham, but that was kind of a different dynamic and obviously a different era. So that was sort of a new thing too, where although it seems that based on what they were going for, they were thinking of that this would be a transition to have Luger, who was about to turn into a good guy, battle Yokozuna at SummerSlam and then win the title there. But then they decided to make it a count-out victory and extend it later, and then, of course, ended up going back to Brett anyway. So funny how things work out in wrestling sometimes. So we have, before the match, we have a promo with Mean Gene. Bigelow does not really say much of note. It's interesting to me how Bigelow, like, he's, of course, a really large man, but in his movements and in sort of the way he speaks, he comes across as more like a regular guy. It's kind of weird.
Can I tell you a little story about Bam and Bigelow?
Of course.
A few years back, actually, God, 10 years ago now, I waited on Bam and Bigelow. I was working at an Applebee's in Ocean Township, New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm from Asbury Park, New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
So, hence why I picked this match. And also, Hockey Fever, Devils tomorrow. But anyway.
Okay, right.
regardless. So he comes in to eat, and I was waiting on him, and he's the nicest. He was the nicest person. Like, just very soft spoken, and he was like, he brought like 8x10s with him to give out. And he just said, like, anyone can talk to me about whatever they want. Just when my food comes, I prefer to be left alone. And, you know, the food came, and then he hung out for like another hour, just like talking to people. And he had a huge crew. It wasn't like he was all depressed like Virgil is. So it's just, yeah. So I'm saying that really comes across where he's this giant dude and he's eating like three dinners, but he's Bobby Lashley before there was a Bobby Lashley.
Right. Well, that's cool. That's neat. It's just interesting to see how, and you know, he was always a guy who it felt like should have been a bigger deal than he was. And he had a great career, but just, you know, just with the look and with, you know, his athleticism and with, you know, everything that he did, it felt like, wow, he should have been one of the biggest stars ever. And he just ended up, you know, having a good career. You know what I mean?
I don't really know if they were ever going to get behind him as a monster heel. Like, his first run back in, what, 88, 89, he was this no-nonsense babyface. He was doing cartwheels, and he was this huge guy doing all this agility, and it was a big deal. But then, you know, his second run, I mean, they come in, and he's feuding with the Boss Man, and then Men on a Mission, and the Doinks. And, you know, 2 years after the King of the Ring, they put him with Lawrence Taylor, and yeah, that's the highest profile match he ever had, and he closed at WrestleMania, and that's a big deal.
Sure.
But the reason they put him in there is because they wanted someone who was going to lose to this non-wrestler who it wouldn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter that he got heat on Bam Bigelow. They're not going to put Sid. You know, in that position. They're not going to put Shawn Michaels in that position.
Yeah. Well, so, and also someone who can give him a good match and,
of course.
And could be physically impressive and looking like he could beat, you know, LT, and then, you know, LT accomplishes something by being this big man. So there's that dynamic as well, but you're definitely right. Yeah.
So, I mean, but yeah, I mean, all the LT feud really did is it sort of brought him up a little bit. He became like a semi-main eventer, like tagging with Diesel as a face. Mm-hmm. He got some cool new orange tights. And then he went to ECW and he put Taz the ring. So, you know.
Yeah, and then he challenged Goldberg in WCW. You
know? Oh, right, yeah. The
Jersey Triad.
The Jersey Triad.
Right.
But, yeah, whatever. I mean, I'm saying, it's like, I love Bam and Bigelow, and I'm certainly biased because I'm, you know, it's the local man makes good. But,
sure.
You know, if you don't put him with someone who it matters, it's not going to do anything. It's...
Yeah,
you know, we were talking earlier. Yeah, Doink may have been a better worker and may have been more over than any right being. But come on, are you ever going to imagine Doink carrying the IC title?
Right. Yeah. Well, today maybe, but you know, then not so much.
Right. I'm trying to keep good vibrations here.
Sure. anyway, I guess we should get into the match a little bit.
Sure.
We have Jim Ross, Bobby Heenan, and Randy Savage on commentary. There's a little bit of talking over each other throughout, although I actually sort of thought it gel. I was like, oh, these guys are kind of talking to each other, not the best chemistry, but then it kind of feels a little bit better toward the end.
I love that. I love their commentary.
Okay.
I thought, I thought it was great.
Yeah. They definitely express a lot of surprise that Bret Hart is continuing to kick out of various various predicaments that he's in. We have Bret limping to the ring, favoring his leg. Start off pretty quickly with Bam Bam charging into the corner but misses. Get a bit of a slugfest, which Bam Bam wins. Then off the ropes, and Bam Bam tries to press him, but then Bret actually falls down on top,
Yeah.
though, and gets the two, which was kind of a cool variation on that, because normally you kind of get the babyface trying to press the much heavier heel and then it failing, but in this case it was Bret kind of just using his leverage.
Tournaments, like, they offer the interesting quirks like this, where you have to wrestle different kind of styles to keep it fresh. Even then, just the intro is like, Bret doesn't come to the ring in his jacket and glasses because he already did that earlier in the show.
Right.
It's like a nice sense of continuity, and like Jim Ross is saying, like, I hope we have satellite time. So I think both Bret and Bam Bam realize that this match, even though the story is Bam Bam is fresh as a daisy and he hasn't wrestled in over an hour or something like that. I think there needs to be a certain sense of desperation and exhaustion to it because you're so late into the night. So that cool, Bam Bam drops him spot where Bret fall, is able to shift his weight. It seems more like a desperation spot than it was a technical spot, which is great to see earlier in a match
Exactly.
when you've had 45 minutes of wrestling already.
Right. Yeah. And Ross makes a big deal about the amount of wrestling each one has had. Like, Bret's been in the ring for about 40 minutes, and Bam Bam's only been, like 10 minutes or so. I forget the exact numbers, but basically,
He pinned Duggan in 5 minutes flat.
Okay, there you go. So exactly. So obviously, Bigelow being the much more fresh man. So
Yeah.
that was a nice, like quick, like, oh, maybe Bret can steal one there, and then obviously he kicks out. Although Bret's able to pound him, he works the arm bar for a little while, and then Bam Bam ends up shoulder blocking him down, and then lifts him up for the press slam, and successfully this time, and then sends him way down to the floor.
Yeah. This it's weird too. This is almost also when it went outside and got a little dirtier and a little more rugged. It's actually this is almost where Bret was getting in some of his hope spots.
Right.
Like he did, I, this is this might be a little later in the match if I'm skipping ahead, just I'll pull it back. But he did the dive to the outside.
Yeah, that was later in the match,
That was
but
later?
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that later. Then we get to
Yeah,
it.
but you're right. There are, Bret was great with that, with just just a little bit, like a couple of punches here, and then he get cut off by something, or
Yeah.
or get thrown in the corner in the Irish whip and that kind of thing. I mean, Bret was, yeah.
That's the one thing about this match. The Irish whips in this match were so hard.
Yeah, and Bret took a decent number of hard ones as well. I mean,
Right.
he did both the chest bump to the turnbuckle and the back bump to the turnbuckle a lot. So
Yeah.
he
I
was
mean
known for
that
that.
ring shook. It looked nasty. It really added a lot to just again, just the desperation of winning this because Bam Bam loses. He loses to a tired man who wrestled 40 minutes. And if Bret doesn't win, well, wasn't he just champion 4 months ago?
Right, exactly, yeah. So he comes out to, or Bigelow comes out to break the count, and sends him in, which the announcers kind of bring up as not good strategy, because he could have, won the match, because they feel like Bret would have been countered out. In fact, Savage says it's not over, but it's over, which is a great
Yeah.
Savageism, I could try to do a Savage impression, but I'm not going to, because I don't want to embarrass myself. So,
Okay. I will embarrass myself later.
okay, very good. I appreciate that. A lot of headbutts to the back from Bigelow. Headbutts were a good offensive weapon for him. Then he sends Bret back in the turnbuckle. I think one of those big bumps where I think where Heenan says that the ring went like 2 feet, as he was wont to do on things like that. And then Bigelow gets a near fall on, or goes for a cover, and then Bret gets his foot on the ropes the first time. So then he hooks the leg, and then Bret has to kick up on the second
Which
kick.
is the smart thing to do.
Exactly, yeah. And then we have more focus on the back, and Bigelow does a lot of, headbutts and things to the back, kind of pounds on that, and lifts him up and does a hard delayed back suplex for two, which he did a couple back suplexes in this match, and they looked really good.
Right.
And then, as we mentioned, Brett kind of gets a few little comebacks here and there, but then always gets cut off, gets sent into the other corner for an Irish whip, and then sells them really like he's in agony. But the thing I love about Brett is he's so subtle about it. Like, and I love Flair too, but Flair, it's just like everything with Flair is kind of like over the top, and it's just like the screaming and the agony and the ah. Where Brett, like, he's lying there, he's hurt, but he's not quite making a show of it. And I love both approaches, but I love that both approaches are different, but communicating kind of the similar things.
Right. That's well. That's why. I mean, I'm more of a Flair guy, but it's why they're two of the. They're the best. It's
Yeah.
they're it's storytelling. It's professionals working. It's so hard to almost like talk about good matches because it's just like this happened and it was good. This happened and it was good. But it's like. They're pros. You're engaged. You're lost in the moment, you know?
Yeah, and then I think it may also explain why the two of each other have very different opinions of each other as workers and
Yeah.
kind of their approaches to matches. So, then we have another headbutt drop, this time to the chest, and that leads to another near fall. Brett having to kick out. Bam Bam locks in the bear hug, and he locks it up very high. So Brett's almost like draped on his shoulders, and he's holding the lower back, which is actually works well because that's the area he's really been targeting.
I mean,
And
it's the back was the story of the match.
yeah, oh, definitely.
I'm pretty sure Perfect was working on it too.
Oh yeah, that's a good point.
So that's
Yeah.
what it was. It was every match he was having his back worked on, and I mean, Razor Ramon had a lot of the fall-away slams and all that kind of stuff in his repertoire. So I think the story was just he's got serious back issues.
Sure. And he also was limping a bit. I mean, and I think his hand also was another thing, although it didn't
Yeah.
really come into play in this match, but they mentioned it during the commentary. So, and obviously a tournament that makes sense. You were going to have more than one thing. You can throw out the other stuff and still have the back be the focus just because of, how the match plays out. So, and Morello checks Brett's arms one time, but he keeps it up. Then Brett's able to kind of get out of it by grabbing Bam Bam's face, but then Bam Bam hits another back suplex for two. Announcers are really in disbelief that he's able to kick out at this point. I mean, just all of them, even Ross, are all kind of screaming like, "I can't believe he's kicking out of this stuff,"
Yeah. Macho was just like, Hitman's gotten some RESPECT for me, brother.
he said that
That was a Hogan all of a sudden. I don't know why it
he.
turned into a Hogan, but it
Right.
was.
He said that a couple times. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Bam, or then Heenan's like, he should just quit. This is dumb. Like he should,
Yeah.
it's just, they're all like all of their different ways, getting thrown in there. But, and then, we head outside and then the kind of where you're talking about, where it kind of gets more of a brawl. And, Brett's able to reverse Bigelow into the barricade, and then he goes on to the apron and then hits an elbow to Bam Bam's back as he's on the barricade. And then he jumps off the apron for a third time, and then Bigelow catches him and then rams his back hard into the post, and then a body slam into onto the floor. So more work
Right.
on the back, and Brett has the hope for a minute, but then he gets cut off there.
I mean, after the dive, I mean, he was throwing down some. I mean, after. I mean, just. I mean, the dive after being on the ground. I mean, he was throwing some stiff shots in there too, or at least that's what Bret Hart did so great is that his punches and his kicks look so real.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I remember watching that the other day, and I was just like, oh my God, like no one throws a punch like that anymore.
Yeah, he was terrific at that, no question. Yeah. And apparently, was one of the safest guys to work with too. So
They always are,
yeah, it was pretty amazing. So then at this, Bigelow heads back in the ring and jaws with Joey Morella, who's the referee. And then Luna sneaks in and grabs and has a chair with him, and then nails Brett in the back with it, and then scurries away before Morella can come around and
I
see.
loved I loved that. No mugging, just I did my job and I just ran back.
Right,
It's
exactly.
just again, it's just this match has had the little pieces of just logic in there that they don't do anymore.
Yeah, now.
And it also, I mean, it was a cartoonish wrestling match. I mean, the entire card was you know, was very much, you know, late 80s, early 90s WWF, but...
Yeah. Oh, I mean, 1993, the whole thing was a cartoon, and just everyone's in neon, and everything's so bright,
yeah.
and everything's so flashy, no question.
But just literally every second they're in the ring, and I don't even, like, I mean literally in the ring, if they're brawling on the outside, it turns to a cartoon again.
Right.
But when they're in the ring, it's the most serious thing in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what, you know... I love about this match so much.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Eventually, Big Low goes out, slides Brett back in, heads to the top, and hits the diving headbutt and gets the three count.
Yep. Our King Bam Bam. We all rejoice.
Yes. Yes.
Thank God we had the satellite time to cover it all. Jim Ross's concerns are assuaged.
Right. Yes, exactly. 25 minutes of satellite time. We got it in.
Yep.
But wait.
Good podcast. Good to go.
Yes. Yes, indeed. But wait. Earl Hebner comes to the ring, and he tells Joey Morella about the presumably the interference that has gone on, and then they confer with Howard Finkel. And Finkel first says that the first referee has reversed the decision, mm-hmm. and then he's immediately corrected and then says, no, in fact, they want to restart the match.
I am mistaken.
kind of an odd decision by the referee, because you figure that the first referee would just say, hey, disqualification because of the chair, Luna's thing. I guess maybe the justification that the first referee didn't see it, so
yeah.
they're going to do the other thing. So just kind of another wacky, you know, like Jim Crockett Promotions-esque thing that WWE was doing there with a sort of a weird... odd, you know, oddity in this match. I mean, it's fine. It doesn't hurt it. And I think Brett's win in the end is, you know, great and special and feels, you know, earned. It wasn't like it.
Yeah. Well, that's why they did it. I mean.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but just sort of an odd thing to throw in there, I guess, to protect Bam Bam a little bit. To give him this say, oh, well, I should have beat Brett because of that or whatever. But. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, what I want to know is, like, how come no one's ever chanted "You screwed Bam Bam" at Hebner?
That's an excellent question. Next time you see Earl Hebner, you should chant that at him.
Yeah, the next TNA show I never go to.
Right, exactly. I wonder if that would now. I wonder if that was just a thing they did where Finkel was just confused in the story,
yeah.
or whether he really messed it. I mean, you would think he'd have been clued in on that, so you think it would have been an intentional screw up. But
I think it was just a gaffe. I think he just misheard. I think he just brain farted.
Okay. You think? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. That's.
But even then, though, because they reverse the call, and Bigelow does the smart thing. He just starts wailing on Bret Hart.
Right, yeah. He just raises a really hard headbutt, stomps down on him, another big bear hug, and then he lifts him up for an over-the-shoulder backbreaker, which I love that. I always love that variation of the backbreaker. I think that one looks better than the torture rack, which I always thought looked cheesy. So
yeah, no, the torture rack is dumb. I mean, no one's that strong where they can that hurts, you know?
Right, yeah. And then eventually Brett flips out and with all his strength is able to lift up, Bam Bam and hit a back suplex, which is really cool. And then Bam Bam gets up, and then misses a senton splash. Brett gets one punch in, but then Bam Bam fends him off right away, sends him into the turnbuckle and Brett crumples down again. So it's looking more and more hopeless for Brett.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bam Bam lifts him up into a backbreaker, but then Brett is able to get on his shoulders and turn into a sleeper. Bam Bam, after you know about a minute or so, ends up flipping him over his shoulder. But I love this. Like, you can tell he's groggy from the sleeper, and he's sort of just ambling around and sort of leans on the ropes. And then Brett dumps him over the ropes and then then jumps over with a plancha, and then his fists of fire, like, on the ground there. Just really cool sequence there.
Yeah, those are the stiff shots, because the camera was right there. That
yes.
You're just and Bigelow, I mean, he's just laying out. I mean, he's not putting his hands up or anything like that, but he's just laying out, and it looks like, I mean, he doesn't look like they don't look like Jack Swagger punches. I mean, it looks like Bigelow is getting a little potatoed.
Yeah, they look great. So... Mm-hmm. Brett then gets a they go back in, and then Brett gets a clothesline off the second rope. Bam Bam kicks out, and then follows the Russian leg sweep and a second rope bulldog, And then he tries the sharpshooter, then Bam Bam immediately powers out of it. And then Brett runs into Bam Bam and gets the bear hug again.
Yeah, it was a nice change up on the Bret Hart finishing sequence. Where usually he goes the leg sweep, he gets on the second rope for the fist drop.
Right.
But Bam Bam got up and turned around.
Right.
So, and so it looked like they improvised the bulldog in there.
Yeah.
And then, it looked like, okay, Hitman's going to win it. And then Bam Bam goes, nah, no sharpshooter, bro.
Not quite, yeah.
And, yeah, so, which, again, you're just like, how tired is Hart? You know, Bam Bam, he's still in control of the match.
Right, but obviously the fatigue, you're getting the point where fatigue's hitting him too. And they both really portray that well. And then Brett's able to try to get into the side suplex position, but Bam Bam lands on top of him, hearkening back to the press slam spot before. And it's a very, very close kick out, very, very close near fall. And the crowd's definitely, pumped at this point,
Cool sequence, the flying clothesline, cash to a bear hug, reverse into a sleeper. And then Bam Bam's weight falls him over. It's you feel like that's going to be it right there.
Exactly. So we get an Irish whip, and then Bam Bam eats Brett or into the corner. Bam Bam charges in the corner and then eats Brett's boot, and Brett gets on his shoulders and then rolls him up for the victory roll.
Mm-hmm.
So and that's for three.
That is our 1993 King of the Ring.
Yes. And I saw a YouTube clip from Bam Bam just talking about this match and talking about how he loved working with Brett and how they asked him about, Brett, this being his third match and if he was tired. And then Bam Bam talked about, well, I'm a pretty easy guy to work with. I do more than most big guys, but I'm still, he does a lot of selling, so I can just kind of throw him around and it's not too hard for him. And Bam Bam told the story that in the finish that, and my guess is that he's actually talking about a different match, but it's certainly possible that when he did the victory roll, Brett passed gas in his face. And then sort of, Brett, they all kind of had a laugh about it. Even the referee, who he says is Hebner, but is actually Morella here. Even laughed about it as well. So I it may be something where he remembered a different match, or it may have been something that we actually did here. But I thought that was kind of a funny story.
This ain't ballet, Jason.
It's definitely not. No.
Sometimes you got to eat a little poop gas.
Right. Exactly. So so interesting things that professional wrestlers go through.
So whatever then, but then, the show's over and Mean Gene comes up and he says, I proclaim thee Brett the Hitman Hart King of the Ring.
Yeah, and then Brett actually does put the robe on and he puts the crown on, which
and you're just like, Jesus.
Yeah,
so
he looks a little dorky in it. Yeah,
but my favorite part of the entire match though is that after Mean Gene says King of the Ring, Macho Man goes, ooh yeah. I love that he has a live mic and that's the only thing I think to say.
Well, he's excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then obviously then the big angle happened afterwards.
Right. Yeah. We have Jerry Lawler coming out and attacking him afterward with the scepter and clocking him in the head pretty good, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Lawler comes out and obviously starts fighting a little bit. I start verbally sparring about.
Sure.
Because this all to me, this is what I kind of love about the match, just the little intricacies here and there. And then Mean Gene, like all snottily, just goes like, "What are you doing here, King Lawler?" And they start, Brett and Lawler start bickering. It goes, and Brett's like, "How come you weren't in the tournament? If you want to, put your money where your mouth is, all that garbage." But then again, this is where it goes back to a cartoon. Where Brett says, as far as I'm concerned, you're the Burger King. And then he starts trying to get a Burger King chant going. And again, this is where Macho Man starts joining in. So he starts chanting Burger King into a live microphone.
Right.
But yeah, and then obviously the beatdown by Lawler was really good.
Yeah.
He threw the chair at him, the scepter shots. He stomped on the crown. It was – and then all of a sudden, now – we have Brett's new feud.
Yeah, and it, you know, went through the summer of 93 and led to a really fun SummerSlam match. I mean, not just the match, but the whole saga of Lawler pretending that he's been in a car accident and, you know, trying to save orphans on the way to the arena and having and hurting his leg so that Doink the Clown's gonna take his place. And then once Brett dispatches Doink, then
Yeah.
Lawler comes in, tries to attack him with the crutch, and then they have their match, and Brett wins it by locking in the sharpshooter, but then he holds the sharpshooter for too long, and the decision is reversed. Just a whole wonderful, wonderful sequence
Right.
that I didn't give justice to in my description, but it's really, really great.
I mean, it's crazy to think that, you know, here's Bret Hart, you know, super serious Canadian hero, and he's in a 2-year feud with this dude
Yeah.
who hates being called Burger King.
Yes.
And he uses an evil clown and an evil dentist with bad teeth
Right.
to dispatch of supposedly the most legitimate character you have in the company.
Yeah. That is
And
sort of a weird that's sort of a weird deal. You're right.
yeah, but it's weird though. I mean, it was named Feud of the Year by The Observer and Feud of the Year by PWI. And, you know, 1993, the WWF fans voted Brett Superstar of the Year.
Yeah.
You know, so did PWI. And it's like, it's just so funny because it's like, it's such a cartoon. I mean, it's a little sillier. It's almost a little sillier than the stuff today, because the stuff today, the universe we've established, you know, WWF, WWE is today, it is a cartoon. Everyone's a clown.
Right.
So it's almost just like, well, why wouldn't Santino Marella have a why wouldn't his arm turn to a snake? Like,
Right.
you know, I love it. I love it. There's a universe where wrestling, Pee Wee Herman, the A Team, and the Muppets are real.
Sure.
But yet we weren't here back in the, you know, 93. But it's so weird that this is what they decided to put their supposedly top guy in there. And even then, you know, Macho and Heenan during the match, they kept saying over and over again, you know, the winner of the King of the Ring gets a title shot. Which, I mean, I don't remember that ever being a stipulation, but they kept throwing that in there. And like, well, wouldn't Brett have already gotten a title shot because he had a, you know, he has a rematch clause and that kind of stuff? Because I looked into this too. You know, Brett never wrestled Yoko again until November 20th of '93,
Right.
and that was his rematch clause. It wasn't his you know, bounty for winning the King of the Ring.
Yeah.
And then obviously he won the title back at WrestleMania 10 from winning the Rumble. But it's so weird where it's like, what's the King of the Ring really matter, you know, if they are just going to take the winner of this brand new pay-per-view concept that they're trying to make the next big deal and they put their top guy in it? What's it matter when he's wrestling clowns and dentists?
You make an excellent point there. I mean, I guess the idea is that he was going to be the number one contender, and then Lawler's vicious attack sidetracks him from getting his, you know,
Right.
chance to battle Yokozuna. And yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Although I really do think that 93 through 95 were really like that universe was pretty cartoonish. Like I don't think this stood out in particular from. You know, I mean, aspects of it were very serious, but it was very much like, you know, there were so many of those characters that were just kind of wacky and kind of silly and kind of bright and, you know, so on and so forth that I don't know if it really stood out as much as even as it might today. Which I mean, the silliness is there; it's just different. It's just it's hard to it's hard for me to describe exactly, but like.
There's less winking at the camera, like this is a show.
Right, yeah, that's definitely true.
It feels like the WF is the island of misfit toys.
Right.
These people have nowhere else to go.
Exactly.
Where now it's just like, oh well, I just want to wrestle because it's a lot of fun. But you know, I really enjoy going on Twitter and making classic cars. It's, you know,
Right.
they're all they're all normal today. They're all normal dudes who do silly things, whereas I prefer in this case silly people doing normal things.
Okay, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
I will say that I do think that the 93 installment of the Bret Hart feud, which basically ended at the Survivor Series, Bret Hart Lawler feud, which basically ended the Survivor Series with Jerry Lawler's legal issues.
With Shawn Michaels somehow, yeah.
Yeah, and then kind of revived, it sort of revived in 95. I think the 93 version is much better than the 95 version.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And again, too, it's just because, you know, they were doing the same stuff they were doing in the earlier hand. It's just, they just threw in, you know, Glenn Jacobs, Kane, whatever you want to call him, Isaac Yankum. And they put in that weird kiss my foot stipulation.
Yeah, exactly.
And I get that you want to see the heel have to kiss someone's foot, but I also don't like looking at gross feet.
That's also something I'm not a fan of as well.
Yeah, that doesn't make me want to put my pay-per-view money down.
Yeah, well, you know. Hey, Vince McMahon's a genius. Who are you to question him?
I'm a stockholder.
All right, fair enough.
No, I have an MBA. I'm way too smart to buy stock in that company.
There you go. Yes.
So yeah, that's Bam Bam Bigelow and his first of three pay-per-view main events.
Yeah.
And I love this match.
Well, good. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It really is. It was better than I remembered it being, and I remembered it being good. Mm-hmm. But there's really some subtleties to it that I don't think I realized that, you know, the first time I saw it, which would have been, you know, 94, 95-ish probably, when I was catching up in VHS tapes. But so yeah, definitely good stuff.
Cool.
So Adam, do you want to let everyone know a little bit about what you're doing?
Oh yeah, the often updated, not really, kayfabecomedy.com. We kind of fallen more into a podcasting groove, and we kind of enjoy that doing more. My partner, Matt, who I've known since I was in college. Every 2 weeks, we like to talk about not so much what's going on in wrestling as much as things wrestling-related that relate to our lives in the real world. We've started calling it the highlight of your fortnight. So 2 weeks, kayfabecomedy.com is always a new podcast. And again, I just want to thank you for letting me on, and keep doing it up, man.
All right. Well, thanks very much. And, of course, everyone should definitely check that out. And check out WrestleSpective.com for all your main event of pay-per-view wrestling needs. We'll be keep on – podcast will keep on showing up there and on iTunes if you want to check us out there. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back at you soon.